everyone, and welcome to the 46th episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
You're so much better at that than I am. You should always start every episode. You're just so much better at it.
So this is Jill, and I'm obviously here with Adam.
Hello, everyone.
So tell us about today's episode, Adam.
Today's episode is an interview I did as a part of our ongoing series with our local library, Cuyahoga County Public Library. I did an interview with author Lisa Fenn. If that name doesn't sound familiar, I think her story might for a lot of people. She did a ESPN kind of documentary a long time ago about two Cleveland high school students at the time. One of them's name is D'Artagnan Crockett, and the other one's name is Leroy Sutton. They were two wrestlers in high school, and they were really close friends in the inner city of Cleveland. But the thing that set them apart is Leroy, when he was really young, got in an accident where he literally had his legs had to be amputated because mm-hmm. he got literally hit by a train. And D'Artagnan is legally blind. So if you remember seeing on ESPN at all, or a story about one high school wrestler kind of carrying the other around to classes yeah. and how they're helping each other out, this is the two of them. And so she tells the story, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing in our intro, but she basically tells the story about how they did an initial story about them on ESPN, and then she kind of went along with her business because she was a producer. Mm-hmm. She tried not to get involved in the stories, and she felt bad for them because she didn't know what was next in their lives. But they did a follow-up story, and people donated lots of money, and they were able to go to college, and their story is amazing. So when I got to the library, I had a bunch of questions prepared for Lisa.
Right.
And as Lisa comes in, she's actually wheeling Leroy in his wheelchair. He was going to be a part of the author event that they were doing. It was so cool. I wasn't aware of that. So the questions I asked are a little bit different than what we normally ask. Sure. Because I was just like, he looked at me. He's like, "Do you want me to be in the interview?" And I wasn't going to say no. This is kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Sure.
The cool thing about both of them is I kept kind of gushing before and after I recorded about how wonderful their story was and how inspirational they are. And they both just kind of laughed and they looked at me. They're like, "We're normal people." Mm-hmm. And I was like, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine all the people that come up to them and say, "Your story is an inspiration." But it's funny. They literally just like, "We just want to be normal human beings." I'm like, I understand that. But also your story is truly unbelievable.
So, right.
They were as amazing as I would expect them to be. Lisa, it's really funny having the back and forth because Lisa will tell this unbelievable emotional response to one of the questions I ask, and then Leroy will joke around and make you laugh. And it was so cool. Their story, the book, is called Carry On, and it's been optioned for movie rights.
Awesome.
So if you're not familiar with the story, people are calling it kind of like the next Blind Side.
Okay.
So if you're not familiar with the story, first off, read the book. Well, first off, listen to this podcast.
Then go read the book.
Then go read the book, because it's amazing. If you look up Lisa Fenn, ESPN, all the stuff that they...
Okay.
You'll see the documentaries and things like that. But, seriously, a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Good to meet these people.
So awesome. Well, good.
I love our jobs.
Yeah, right?
I know. if people want to get a hold of us, how can they do that?
They can find us on Facebook and Twitter and email us directly at feedback@overdrive.com. Mm-hmm. Those are the best places to get a hold of us.
Those are the best places. And also, if you're looking for any of the books that we recommend, there weren't any book recommendations on this episode, but as you may be aware, every other episode we do is a book recommendation one. You can go to overdrive.com and click the explore button. We have all of the books that we recommend there. And there's also our Pinterest page where we have all the books ever. I just want to give you a shout out. You did an episode recently where it's all nonfiction.
Yeah.
And I'm not normally a nonfiction writer or reader. So as I was tracking all of the books that you guys were talking about, I was like, "And I'm going to read this one. And I'm going to read this one." So if you haven't listened to the nonfiction one, because maybe you don't think it's going to interest you, super cool. You guys talk about all the books that would be like a good introductory to nonfiction, and just really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just me giving you some love because you're sitting across from me.
I appreciate that.
anything else you think people should know, or anything you want to share, anything?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
Okay, cool. Well, I really hope you guys enjoy this interview with Lisa Fenn and Leroy Sutton. They are amazing human beings, even though they just want to be considered normal people, which I totally understand. But they're truly special people. So I hope they enjoy it.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, enjoy this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hi everyone, this is Adam from Team Overdrive, and today I'm joined by Lisa Fenn, a three-time winner of the Edward R. Murrow Award and a six-time Emmy Award-winning feature producer with ESPN for 13 years. Her work has been featured on Good Morning America and World News Tonight, in addition to ESPN as well. She recently had a book published called Carry On about a story that I'm about to have her tell just a little bit to you about, and I'm also joined by Leroy Sutton, one of the people who is a big part of that story. So first off, thank you both for joining us today. I can't tell you how much of an honor it is for me to get a chance to speak with you both.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us. All right, so Lisa, as I said, it's an honor to chat with both of you. Would you mind maybe summarizing, if you can, the background to Carry On? I don't want to even try to give an introduction to this story, so I'm just going to turn the floor over to you guys, if you wouldn't mind.
Do our best. I was working as a feature producer at ESPN in 2009. My specialty was sort of stories of people overcoming obstacles and achieving remarkable things with sports as a backdrop. And it was in that year that my attention was drawn to a photograph of two high school wrestlers from Cleveland, Ohio, Leroy Sutton and D'Artagnan Crockett. Leroy endured a horrific train accident when he was 11 years old. He lost both of his legs. D'Artagnan was born legally blind. He has difficulty discerning the facial features of someone just a few feet away from him. And Leroy and D'Artagnan were high school seniors. They were wrestlers, and they were very close friends. That friendship began growing because D'Artagnan would carry Leroy to and from their team buses and around their wrestling competitions and up and down the bleachers when things were chaotic at their meets. And the two of them grew quite close. They also had difficult home lives. Leroy's moved very frequently. His mother was not equipped to sort of handle the care he needed after his accident. D'Artagnan's mother passed away when he was a child, and his father battled addiction issues. He was transient when I met him, with no permanent place to call home. And so they, in addition to their disabilities, their poverty was, and their circumstances were almost equally disabling. But what really struck me was how they sort of combated those circumstances with this extraordinary friendship and with the laughter that they shared and with just the brightness in their eyes, that they were boys who very clearly had goals and dreams and aspirations, and they were doing everything in their power to just make it through each day together. So I embarked on to do a story on their friendship and on them as wrestlers, and I did that for ESPN. And much to my great delight, many viewers came forward offering money and opportunities to lift them out of poverty, and together we sort of embarked on that journey to try to piece together the futures that they wanted. And we sort of thought we faced many daunting obstacles along the way that we all came to understand the effects that living in chronic poverty has upon one's coping mechanisms, upon the life skills that they carry out with them, upon the education that they receive. And we found that we had more to overcome than we anticipated. And we faced a lot of circumstances that are detailed in the book that could have easily caused us to give up or driven us apart. But instead, as the title says, we carried on and we persevered, and we learned a lot about the power of committed love and committed support of one another to reach an individual's full potential.
And Leroy, there's something in one of the several pieces that ESPN has done on you guys that towards the end of it, I think it was you talking about D'Artagnan, and you're obviously both very close, and watching it, I'm very close with my brother, and you said, you know, we're brothers, we're a family, and it your bond looks exactly like I would describe my bond with, you know, my paternal brother. And did that kind of form quickly, or did it take a little bit of time? Was it sort of when you first started wrestling? I'm just curious how that friendship began.
It kind of just, I met him 1 year, a friend introduced us at lunch, and kind of just introduced us for that time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see him for the rest of that year because that was our junior year. Then when senior year happened, I went out for the wrestling team, and that's when everything started to, you know, our lives started to more collide. You know, we hang out after school most of the time, and when we go into practice, it was just, it was usually me and him wrestling against each other. So people don't know that, they don't realize that wrestling is more of a get inside your opponent's mind. Mm-hmm. Type of thing. So with me wrestling D'Artagnan all the time and him wrestling me, we kind of understood each other. Mm-hmm. More as time went on. And then for someone to like put you on their back and carry you, you know, that's and it's intimate in its own way. Like, yeah. that pulls a bond closer. You have to trust that person not to drop you. Mm-hmm.
that's a really good point. That's very true.
So,
something that I am just so blown away by, you know, Lisa, for you, you've interviewed people from every walk of life, from the, you know, most famous athletes in the world to people who, until you create a story about them, no one has ever heard of. What was it about Leroy and D'Artagnan that maybe made them so special in your mind, or set them apart from all these other stories that you've been able to tell?
Well, you know, I think that so many of the athletes that I cover are special. I don't necessarily rank them in their order of,
sure.
of specialness. I think I was really struck by the level of need in their lives, although they didn't recognize it as that because mm-hmm. it was just normal to them. But yeah. for me, coming from a middle class stable home, it really opened my eyes to the challenges that people in generational poverty face. And so I was really struck by their resilience in the face of those circumstances, and also how they didn't sort of carry, they didn't have a chip on their shoulder about them. They didn't have a sense of entitlement. They were extremely humble, extremely friendly. There was a tenderness between them and the way that they treated other people in the school that, you know, their expression of compassion toward one another, the whole carrying, it was something that you don't expect to find in sort of urban teen culture. Mm-hmm. So it really stood out to me as remarkable.
And Leroy, just to, you know, where your whole story started with this horrible accident, and like seeing the different features about you, and even just meeting you and talking with you just for a few minutes here, like, you have this like easygoing, like light about you that I meet people who come from the best situations and don't have that. What do you think it is, either about your personality, or what was it after your accident that kind of kept you going and kept this amazing outlook on life that you seem to have?
It's mainly like, I'm still alive.
Yeah.
I got a lot more living to do. So, and on top of that, the jokes and everything, if you can't laugh at yourself, you can't laugh at anybody else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I make jokes with D'Artagnan about him being blind, and he makes jokes about my legs, and, you know, it's a back and forth thing between us. But it's the main outlook is just, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And I still have a lot to say, a lot to do.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so and Lisa, if you don't mind me asking, what's the process for a story like this to come about when you are producing something like this? I guess, how do you, you said you came across a picture of them, but when you're producing a story, how does that process work?
Well, in a normal feature story that I would shoot for television, say I'm doing a story that's anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes mm-hmm. long, we would it would probably be about 3 to 5 shoot days, I would say. Mm-hmm. You would have a day where you would interview your subject and the supporting characters in the story, and then you would have days where you would shoot what we call B-roll with them. So if it's a, say it's an athlete who's a runner, well, you would, you know, shoot various runs in different locations. You would interview their coaches or their teammates, and any other, shoot any other sort of events that are going on in their life or their day-to-day routines, whatever it is that supports the narrative. But that process usually takes about 3 to 5 days, and then an edit, a writing edit process might take anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks, depending on how complicated it is. So this story was certainly unique in that I shot for the better part of 5 months. Mm-hmm. I wasn't shooting every day, but I was on the ground here probably about two-ish weeks out of every month. Mm-hmm. In part because there wasn't really anyone to coordinate through. Like, normally when I'm shooting stories with minors, I'm organizing everything through their parents. But in this case, they didn't have parents who were involved in their lives. Mm-hmm. So, and their phones weren't always working, and the school didn't always have the right schedule for their practices and their meets. And so I really needed to be on the ground quite a lot just to get it figured out myself. And that led to us spending more time together than I would normally spend with a feature subject, which was a good thing. Yeah.
All right, Leroy, I have to know, and you can be honest, because it was, you and I are about the same age, so you were in high school while this was all happening. When Lisa kind of first came into your life and you knew that she was going to be kind of around all the time, what was that like? What was that, like, initial thought of, like, oh, a complete stranger is going to be asking me questions all the time?
When it comes down to when she first showed up, that was more of a defense mechanism. I didn't actually know it was happening at the time.
Sure.
But we later figured out there were a lot of media that jumped in and out of my life. Mm-hmm. So it kind of felt like they were turkey people. So you'd show up, you know, Thanksgiving, here's your turkey, and then boom, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know? So like that's it. What he I originally
a,
thought.
He got a lot of coverage after his accident, mm-hmm. from media people. And I think as a child, that wasn't really explained to him, that these were not long-term relationships, or that his picture and his recovery and his limbs were going to be put all over the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And as a child, that's a difficult thing to process.
Yeah.
So I'll let you finish, but there's certainly a knee-jerk reaction.
Let you finish in a minute.
There's certainly a knee-jerk reaction to not talk to me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And then, you know, after I let her in that first little bit, that's when I started to pay more attention to how she interacted with other people and D'Artagnan, and, you know, then it was like, all right, I'll trust you a little bit more, and I pushed the envelope, mm-hmm. I guess.
Was D'Artagnan kind of the same way? Was he a little bit guarded? No, not at all.
Nope. He sang like a canary as soon as she asked him the first question.
Oh, that's amazing.
D'Artagnan's more of an extrovert, and it was also his first experience with the media, so mm-hmm. he was pretty eager to have a little attention.
Yeah.
And Leroy not quite
whenever
as much.
Whenever he's asked that question, he's going, ESPN, come to film me? Give me a little spotlight?
Oh, that's amazing. So at what point, Lisa, for you, did this story become more than a story that you wanted to share with the world, something that you thought you kind of wanted to step in from being a producer of a story to being something more to Leroy and D'Artagnan?
Well, I think from early on, just assessing sort of the need in their life and knowing that the dreams that they had, but also I knew that they had no viable pathway to get there. Mm-hmm. They didn't really know that, but I could see that at that time college was not a reality, and even working was in question. And so I definitely had a pull to want to sort of solve these problems. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to do it. But certainly every time I left our shoots, in my head was, I wish I could just put them in the car and take them home and make it all better. And so on my mind when their feature aired, I was really hoping that just one viewer would see this and have the means and the resources to help them sort of financially. And that was a very small prayer because hundreds of people came forth and were moved to compassion. And so that was great. And I harnessed all those resources, and I really thought that I would just sort of send them off to college and wave proudly from afar as they rode off into their new lives, as I often say.
Leroy's shaking his head no.
But none of us really understood that that was not something that they were prepared for.
Yeah.
Academically, they weren't prepared for it. Life skills, they weren't prepared for it. And so, yes, we sent them off, but it wasn't the end because there were so many obstacles that we still had to overcome and so many deficient life skills that we had to navigate together. And so the process of becoming more involved in each other's lives was a gradual one as the needs grew bigger. And we kind of realized, like, we're in this for the long haul.
Yeah.
But there wasn't really anywhere else I wanted to be.
And this is touched on a little bit, Leroy, in the ESPN feature, but maybe for our listeners who aren't familiar with the story, can you maybe take us through just like what was going through your mind when Lisa started giving you guys these phone calls and these messages saying, like, there's people that want to help, you know, send you to college and kind of give you, you know, that next level of education that you didn't think was possible. Like I said, they touch on it a little bit, but just what was going through your mind when that happened?
There was disbelief. It's like, all right, that's cool. Yeah. It's nice to hear, but thanks. And then after a while, it was like, oh, this is becoming real. Yeah. It's got real, real quick. And, you know, just she helped me fill out my forms for going to college. And between her and our student counselor, they helped me figure out FAFSA and, you know, everything like that. Because mm-hmm. I didn't know how to fill all that stuff out.
I don't honestly. That's you're not alone in that. I don't think anyone going to college initially knows how to fill any of that stuff out. So you're not alone in that.
Yeah. So, you know, at first it was I don't know, and then after a while it started to become more and more. Our coach Justin Hans flew to Arizona with me to check out the school, and it just started to become more of a reality. Mm-hmm. And still to this day, it seems like a dream. So
yeah. So something that really hits me about the story of I grew up in Cleveland as well. I'm a native, and the thing that I really love about this is not only are you bringing to light these two amazing human beings, but you know, people lately, thankfully, Cleveland has been getting a lot of positive attention. People have been writing articles about the city's on the rise and it's back, and you see lots of articles about many cities like that, but these stories that you've created, I think they're so important because they shine a light on the fact that every city, no matter how big or small, they have people who are amazing human beings that maybe just need a little bit of help. Is that something that you were thinking of when you were doing this story, is you could change, you know, not just two lives, but you know, more than just two lives? I mean, you've clearly touched untold amount of people with this story.
Yeah, it was definitely one of our motivating factors for writing this book. Obviously, it took a lot of courage for Leroy and D'Artagnan to put their personal stories and the traumas of their past out there for the world to see.
And a lot of it I didn't know until she was writing it.
Yeah.
And it was a challenge for me just even learning how to put a book together. But it was certainly one of our guiding motivations was that a lot of people ask us, you know, how can I do something similar, mm-hmm. or how can I help? Or students will ask us, where can I find someone to guide me like this? And so we just hope that this is one tool that will show people the commitment necessary, the love necessary, mm-hmm. and that it's not so hard to sort of cross those perceived barriers of race and socioeconomics and age to forge relationships with people who are different from you.
On a lighter note, I have to know, so I know Tom Rinaldi was a big part of this piece, and I just imagine him, does he just like walk around when he's not recording trying to make people cry with the things he says?
Yes!
I feel like every single time, like I was joking with some of the people at the library before you guys got here, every time I watch a piece that he's a part of, especially your guys, my wife will come downstairs and I'll be watching TV and I'll be like wiping my eyes and she's just like Tom Rinaldi type of a story. So I just imagine, like, when the cameras aren't even rolling, is he like trying to get emotional stuff out of you at all times?
It's every time he talks to me. It's every single time. It's just like he could say hi and I just start bawling.
He has one of those voices where it's, I just imagine him going like around the like the ESPN campuses, just being like, I have a story for you. You're not going to believe it. And you're like, where's the box of tissues? I need a moment.
One of his most admirable qualities is his earnestness. Mm-hmm. And so the voice that you hear and sort of the emotion behind it is how he lives his life. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely not performing.
Yeah.
He's not walking around making people cry. But he does walk around making everyone he meets feel very special.
Mm-hmm. And then this is just kind of one more thought from both you guys. We've only been chatting for about 20 minutes. So we can't possibly touch on everything there is in the story, but when people go and they buy and they borrow Carry On, what do you hope they take away from the story? And this can come from both of you guys or whoever feels comfortable answering it.
Well, I think it's a book that appeals to just a wide variety of readers because there's so many different themes woven throughout it. It's for people who are up against long odds, and it's for people who want to become agents of change. It's for people who are mothers, who are mentors, and those looking for just a good underdog sports story. Mm-hmm. It's all in there. And so it's for people who are interested in all of those things, including poverty and education and disability, and it's not a treatise on any of those issues, but those themes are sort of delicately woven into this narrative of great love.
Leroy, is there anything you want to share just about your story, maybe anything you hope people take away from it?
I don't know, she just summed it up pretty well.
That's her job. She wrote the book, so I think exactly. That's okay. Right. Well, one last note regarding a book and the whole story. USA Today and Sports Illustrated called it, you know, the best story ESPN has ever aired. And honestly, I've been on this earth 30 years. So I completely agree. It's amazing. You're both incredibly inspiring people, as is D'Artagnan, who's not joining us today. He's not here, but doesn't mean he's any less part of the story.
He's training so hard right now.
Yeah, I think that's totally a fair reason not to be here. But sincerely, thank you both for taking some time to chat with us. We couldn't be more grateful.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.